All right, time for another episode of the Culture Hall. This one is episode 60. 60. Who would have thought? Not me, certainly. Joining me here in the Culture Hall is Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
So great.
Have a little faith, Brother Richie.
Why?
Because you got to 60, man.
I know. When I get to 100, then there's a thing.
All right.
Right? Because yeah. Then I can go into syndication, and then I don't have to work nearly as hard.
That's what all the TV shows do.
Yes.
Episode 100.
40 more. That means that'll be like next June.
All right.
If I make it. I can do it.
You can do that.
I'm a workhorse.
Hang on, man. Put your shoulder to the wheel.
Push along.
That just happened.
I want just opening exercises here. I want to share a couple emails. This is from Elena? Somebody? This is just a tease for an upcoming episode. Talking about Sistas in Zion. Have you ever heard of that?
Sistas.
Sistas in Zion. It's two women. They're black women.
Okay.
They live in the East Coast somewhere. They do a podcast once a week. And yeah, it's funny.
That's
they
cool.
They do a couple hours.
Yeah,
going to have them on the Cultural Hall here in the future.
Oh, nice. Are they coming to town or just
on
the phone?
No, just going to get them on the phone.
Cool.
I love that you did hand gestures for town was pointed down and phone was the sign for a banana.
Girl. Yeah. You know I'm like white chocolate, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Just checking.
I've heard. The internet has
it does not lie. Yes,
such things. And that dance, I don't know how you do that thing with the
booty and the booty. Clapping. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
It's phenomenal.
I've severely offended the sisters, by the way.
Yeah, they're like great white chocolate. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope she's around for that interview. So that'll be upcoming. They're really funny. I had an opportunity to listen to them. They should be great, kind of a fun addition. And part of our outreach to other people in the community doing similar things to what we do, we're going to try and reach out to some of those folks. So if there is a blog or a site that or a podcast as well that you listen to that kind of in the same vein of here in the Cultural Hall, send it to us. Let us know. We'd like to get in touch with them and find out more about that. It's theculturalhall.com. And then there's a contact us, or you can just send an email to richie@theculturalhall.com. One more email, and then we'll get into some topic. I'll harass you about something.
All right, cool.
This goes to me, says Brother Stedman. This is from Margo. Says, I was wondering if there is a printed copy of your podcasts. The answer is no. My son is on a mission and cannot listen to your show, obviously, because he's serving a mission. Though I think we should be mission approved.
I think so.
She says, I have listened twice to the Charlie Jenkins episode. And do you know who Charlie Jenkins is?
Country singer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He, Mormon guy, went on a mission. He came in, played a little bit for us. In fact, that's one of the ones, whenever we have musicians in that we have them play some music for us, really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. But she says, I've listened to the Charlie Jenkins episode twice, and the part where he talked about why he went on a mission and about the article in the newspaper about the Parker family that came out afterwards. So he served in Chicago
okay.
mission, talked about how he met the Parker family, and the reason why that's significant is his son, the son of this mom that he taught, is Jabari Parker.
Oh, the basketball player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you know, and in a year everyone will go, how did we not know who Jabari Parker
right,
is?
Right, yeah.
But he's this phenomenal basketball player. He's LDS. He's strong in his faith. And Charlie Jenkins had the opportunity to kind of teach his family the gospel. It says, I don't know if my son knows who the Parker boy is, because we're not sports fans, but... says Margo, the story would be the same even if the kid was not famous. The family stayed active, and the boy Elder Jenkins baptized is still faithful. My son is preaching to the Haitian people in Boston, Massachusetts, which is random,
yeah,
she says. I
yeah.
know. She says it's the Haitian Creole-speaking Massachusetts Boston mission.
Wow.
I can't even say it clearly. And in being transferred, he's found that some people he taught at first have fallen away. She says, I feel that this part of the Jenkins story would just give him a lift. Thanks, P.S. I love the show. I wish everyone would listen and learn. I'm a convert, meaning she hasn't listened to all the episodes yet, but will be a lifer as soon as I can figure out how to get the other episodes. Thanks and stay faithful, Sister Margo.
That's so nice. You know what you need to do is now type up the story for her and send it to her.
I sure
her.
Will.
Yeah. Get right on that.
I've got free time, so I'm going to sit down and pound that out.
Yeah.
in my free time.
Because it's for a good cause. It's for the mission.
She could... I'll send her a CD.
Okay.
I'll
edit there you go.
Just the story and she can send it. I don't know. I think that would be cool, but that seems like such a process to have an actual transcript of it. So, unfortunately, no, there's not. We appreciate that you're listening, trying to become a lifer. Here's how you do it. If you can't get all the episodes through iTunes, which I guess some people say you can't, you can only get the last 50 episodes. If you go to theculturalhall.com, click on the Listen Now button, you can scroll down and see all the old episodes and just be able to download them that way.
And you have to start today because they're like an hour each, right? So that's like 60 hours.
Right, plus the articles of news. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got 100 hours.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But
that'd be like how much time it would take me to write the transcript
exactly.
of the Charlie Jenkins
no
story.
No one's doing that much work today. No.
Not today. So, Lindsay, thanks for being here. Thank you for agreeing to come in here.
Thank you for having me. It's fun.
Are you really enjoying
yourself? No, I really am. Yeah? I like chatting with you.
About church stuff or just chatting with me?
In general, everything.
Let's talk about you being married.
Okay.
Because you were how old when you got married?
I was 27.
Had you given up on being single or on being married?
No.
No?
Not at that point, but I was definitely frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I, like many, wait and wonder if and when it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel bad for those people that are quote unquote waiting because I don't want them to miss out on life just because they're waiting. Like I have a really dear friend who is
waiting.
Yeah. And she's just like, every guy could be the one and every, you know, like I just want her to settle down, just relax, just do her thing and like, just let it happen. And if it doesn't, be okay with that. You know what I mean? Cause mm-hmm. I just don't want, you know, no one knows if it's going to happen for her. I certainly hope it does. And she's a great girl, but I just don't want her to spend her whole time just wishing and waiting her life away.
So here's my favorite thing. We've talked about this a bunch here. How married people suddenly know everything that they needed or that they wish they would have known when they were single.
Well,
I'll let you get up on the soapbox here.
No, hindsight is always 20/20.
Sure.
It's so easy for us to sit here and
Absolutely.
Say, here's what I wish I would have known.
Absolutely. So what did you wish you would have known?
I wish I would have known to just let it happen, to not worry about it so much.
Like what, though? That's hard for some people.
I know, but just be independent. Do everything you want to do. Just be yourself. Be like, because once you get married, you are like, it's like you're with that person and that's who you are. So be the person you want to be and then let that other person come to you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay. But can you do that really? Because then what happens if you become too independent and you're like, I don't need another person. Isn't that what most people's fear is?
I don't think there is such thing is too independent because I'm a very independent person.
Uh-huh.
Very.
But you just said that your marriage is now who you are.
But I love being married.
Uh-huh.
I love it more than anything. So I just think that you can be independent and still be married.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think?
I think so. To a point.
Well, obviously
I mean, you can't be so independent. Otherwise, it's like, why am I married? Who are you? What are
I
we doing?
Know.
Why are we?
But obviously, I gotta, you know, have dinner with my husband. Like, that's not the type of independence I'm talking about. I'm just talking about like, he goes away for a week and I'm going to be okay. You know what I mean? Because I can handle myself on my own. And there are things that I like to do that he doesn't do. And I say, honey, I'm going to go do this. And he's like, okay.
That's the worst for me. When my wife goes away, I'm pretty good.
Really?
Yeah. I don't like that. And that's the weirdest thing for me because I never would have thought in a million years that would have been my struggle.
Yeah. Well, I can handle it to a point, and then after like a week or so, I'm like, all right, I need you to come help with the dog, and
see,
I need you to...
mine's not at all. Mine is just like, I need attention. you're whatever you're doing right now is attention to something else that isn't me.
And there's definitely part of that, too, that's like, you're the only one that cares about what's going on in my life, so come back.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Now, if you wouldn't mind, right this second.
Appreciate that.
And see, my tip for the single folks, run. Start running.
Run?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think you should run.
Like not
jog. Like train train for a running race.
Like actually run.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like a run from the problem.
No.
Oh, okay.
That is my cure-all for every single person.
Okay. I like it. I hate running.
Right.
I despise running.
And here's why I think it's so great. So listen up, single people. Running. It gets you in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And shape is good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can say looks, whatever, blah.
It's good.
It's important.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And to whatever degree it is, because there are a lot of people who run who can still be big people. That's fine. Right? But it is healthier for you if you're running.
Mm-hmm.
So boom. healthier for you that way. It's good for your mind because it gives you a chance to just think things through,
mm-hmm.
chance to kind of just soak up life, to just exist to how it is, whatever it is.
See, I'm sorry, but when I run, I'm trying not to die.
Right?
I don't think it doesn't clear my head. It makes me in pain.
Number three, it teaches you to be able to do something that you hate.
True.
Right? Which
can be marriage.
Which in marriage, there are things where you're like, if they don't put the dishes away the way I tell them to, one more, or, you know, insert whatever annoying habit of your spouse can be. But it does. It teaches you to go, all right, I do this and I don't like it, but I can learn to find value in whatever this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the fourth thing is you get a medal.
You get a medal.
When you run races, even if you suck at it so bad, you still get a medal at the end.
They give you a participation medal.
Way to go, pal. You were here today.
I did a sprint triathlon.
Oh, here we go. Here comes the bragging.
No, that was a huge deal for me. You are a jerk.
When you were single?
No, I was married.
See? No, I'm just kidding.
What?
How was it? No, how was it?
It was great. And it was a small one, so I just swam 300 meters, biked 12 miles, then ran 3. But it took me like 2 months of training to get to that
point.
Right?
And it's cool. There's confidence that comes from setting your mind to doing something and then doing it that you can't get from another way.
Absolutely. And that was like 4 months ago. And now I'm like, man, I'm so lazy. I did a triathlon. I can't even get back into it. Mm-hmm. So,
but dudes and ladies love the motivation and that thing. And it's easy because you could do, there are all sorts of levels of running. It seriously is the greatest fix-all for single people. I know I'm going to get crap for this.
No, I appreciate your passion, but I think running is your thing.
Nope,
do,
it's everyone's
do
thing.
Do something
nope,
that is your thing nope, that makes you feel the way running makes you
nope,
feel.
Nope, it's a blanket for everyone.
No,
it is a,
because I despise running.
It is a cure-all.
I would do any form of exercise except running.
I wish that you could sit where I am and just see you where you talked about doing your triathlon and the way your face lit up. And I went, see?
No, I
for
loved
everyone,
it.
For every person.
I loved it, but the run is my least favorite part.
Right. But you do it, and then you get done, and you go, but I'm glad I did it.
True. But it doesn't mean it wasn't miserable.
So, single folks, when you go out on a date, take them running.
Go running.
I did that actually when I was single.
That's
it was awful.
Lame.
It was way lame.
Yeah. Because
workout dates are the worst.
There's nothing pretty about me when I'm running either. It's like, I'm trying to survive. Yeah. There's nothing pretty happening there.
I don't think that people are going to find that as a cure-all.
No. But I do appreciate your passion, and I hope that people do something.
Travel. Is travel a cure-all for everyone?
Sure. Absolutely.
Can we make that something?
Yeah.
No, forget running. Okay. Travel. And
honestly,
here's why. Here's four.
Because I wish that I could have traveled more before I got married.
What's the hardest thing about being married for you? He won't listen. Don't worry.
I know he won't.
Is that the hardest part?
Yeah.
Is that you know he won't listen?
Yeah. He doesn't care about the things that I care about. Honestly, I think it's and this is going to sound cliche, it's money.
Really?
Money is the hardest thing about being married because...
Talk to me, because you have too much?
I wish.
Not enough.
Not enough right now. However, the reason money is the hardest thing is because my husband was finishing school and I was working full time. So mm-hmm. I became the quote unquote sugar mama.
Mm-hmm.
So
which, by the way, is a term that, as far as I know, no women have appreciated.
No, I didn't appreciate it at all. And I kind of took that on personally, like, hey, I'm making all the money, you know, like I'm working hard every day. Granted, my husband was studying for the CPA pretty much 12 hours a day.
Oh, man.
Like,
my
yeah.
wife is doing that right now.
Oh, it's diehard, right? Yeah.
It's awful.
It's miserable.
She does so good and she's so smart. But seriously, it's like if you ever want to feel like you're smart and then feel like you're a big dummy, it's study for the CPA.
Oh.
And I don't even understand what she's doing, but I can just see how she's just like.
My husband, 4.0 throughout college, everything, put himself through college and grad school with scholarships, mm-hmm. and he is struggling so bad, but he's passed the first two, so that's good. So there's
nice.
Two more, but anyway, so I am, you know, making the money and he is studying,
sitting on his butt and studying all day,
sitting on his butt all day doing nothing, you know. And that's kind of how I looked at it, which was terrible for me, and I kind of put that pressure on him. But every time we would have an issue, you know, like he would say stuff like, well, where's the money? We were supposed to have all this money because we bought a house and uh-huh. we saved money on rent because we didn't have to pay rent for a couple of months because uh-huh. we bought our house. And we were supposed to have all this money, and it just wasn't there. You know, stuff came up.
Is that what happened?
I wish. Yeah. No, but like, and so I was the one getting the paychecks. And so I would take that personally. Like, he would think that I was spending all the money, you know, right. and not doing with it what I was supposed to. And I'm like, honey, I don't think you realize that there is no money. So I would take that.
Zero.
$0.
Symbolic of how much money we have.
Yeah.
Zero.
So I would take that really personally. Like, I can't work any harder. I'm working 3 jobs. What else do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. When really he just meant it like, we need to figure out, you know, where the finances need to go. And that's a girl thing. I take everything personally. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard when you don't have a ton of money and you're trying to figure out where everything needs to go. And now things are smoothing out because he started working. So we have a second income now.
Yeah, about time.
I know, right? Get off your lazy butt and go work for your big 4 accounting firm already.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. So... we're going to be set up eventually, but it's just getting to that point that's hard. So.
Set up. I love it. We're going to have it all.
We're going to be Mitt Romney, but yeah. Until then.
How did you overcome it, though? You just said, hey, let's have a talk about it?
Just knowing that it was going to end when he started working. Like, it was like this deadline of getting to that point. Okay. And also me realizing that I was taking it very personally and realizing that he wasn't coming at me like, hey, you're spending all our money. He was coming at me like, hey, we need to figure out where the money goes because we have to make every cent count, you know? So a lot of communication is necessary and phrasing things the right way, especially to your wife.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I'm not saying right now. I'm not saying that you're stealing all the money.
Yeah.
What? I'm stealing all the money?
There is no money.
That's interesting. I always think that it's sort of fascinating to see or hear, I guess, about different people and the way they work through their problems.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like that's hard for you guys or is there something
You know,
else?
Money for us... it's not necessarily money that is hard. It's my wife makes more than I do, and I think that that's hard for her.
Sure.
Not to say that I do poorly. I mean, she does well.
Yeah.
And determine that however you want it to. I'm not going to tell you how much we make.
Right,
all right, pal?
Exactly.
I think that she had an idea of how that should be, and that's not what exists.
Right.
And that's hard. Because I think anytime you have a perception of this is how, I always tell this story, and I don't know that I've shared it here in the on the podcast, but my dad, bear with me, this story makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, when I graduated from college, and I graduated in theater, a minor in dance, and I had studied some radio while I was in college. We get done, and he's like, son,
Wait, did you say minor in dance?
Uh-huh.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, modern dance.
Okay.
I'm straight.
Okay.
And so my dad, that Saturday after I graduated and moved back up here, he's like, son, I'm going to take you to Mr. Mack. We're going to go buy you some suits. And I was like, okay, cool.
I
like a suit. You bet. We get there and he's like, son, you know, you're graduating. You're entering the business world or, you know, you're going to be professional now. You're going to get career. You're going to need a suit. I'll get you a couple suits. And I couldn't help but think, Dad, I don't know what you're talking about. I will never work a job where I have to wear a suit.
Right.
But my dad, for his entire professional career, has always worn a suit. So in his mind, he equated suits, business, professional, post-college.
Sure.
And I feel like that the only difficulties that come about, or the struggles, I guess, that come in my marriage is where it goes, what was the expectation and what's the reality?
Right.
You know? Where it's like, okay, a man does this. Where, you know, it doesn't have to be the man that necessarily does that.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
It can be, and that works for some people. And it also cannot be, and it can be just as great if it isn't the man doing it, or if it's the man and the woman doing it together.
Yeah, see, I wish I had grasped that concept more throughout this time where I was making the money and my husband wasn't, because I put a lot of pressure on him, like, hey, I am doing all this, you know what I mean? When really, it doesn't have to be a certain way. It doesn't matter who makes the money. It's still our money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that, it's kind of that, okay, what's the expectation?
Yeah.
And now, all right, so here's what reality is. Are we fine with this reality? Okay.
I think a lot of life is managing those expectations.
Right.
You know, like
and
if you have,
hard.
I've got a mother-in-law that has these unrealistic expectations and then they don't get met and she's just instantly disappointed and she doesn't really know how to manage the expectations,
if
you will.
What does she expect you to do that you don't do?
I think just the relationship with my husband, she has unrealistic expectations that he is still, this is a whole other issue.
Yeah.
You just opened a can of worms. We don't need to discuss it, but just that his relationship with her should still be like the mother son in that he should still be living at home. Like, I swear if she could have it her way, yeah, we would be living at her house.
Only child,
yeah. Single mother.
Right.
Totally get it. But that is, yeah, she has a lot of expectations, and when they don't get met, it can be cumbersome on both of us.
Cumbersome,
to say the least.
All right. Coming up in the second and third block, we kind of get into that a little bit. We talk about homemaking.
Oh, neat.
I visited with the author of a book, Happy Homemaking, an LDS Girl's Guide. And I encourage you so you hear that and you go, it's kind of fascinating. I get tips for doing stuff around the household. But then also we talk a little bit about the point of view of the church, because the book itself is an LDS girl's guide. And I took a little bit of issue with that.
Yeah.
So that's coming up here in the second and the third block of the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast. All right, it is time for the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and joining me via, this is the first time we've ever done this out of my home, a telephone, all the way to Orem, Utah, which is only 20 minutes, so next time I'm going to insist that you come up here, Natalie. It's Natalie Hollingshead, author of Happy Homemaking, an LDS Girl's Guide. Did I get it right?
You did, yes.
Perfect. And you guys also have a kind of a companion website, right? TwoHappyHomemakers.com?
Yes, TwoHappyHomemakers.com, TWO.
For those who don't know Natalie Hollingshead, let me tell you a little bit about her. She's a former magazine editor turned freelance writer. Is this right so far?
Yes.
I always love bios that you can find online, because like mine says that I'm still not married and I'm going to school and that I went to clown college. The clown college part is true, but I'm also married and not in school anymore.
Okay.
It says,
I think that's pretty recent in my bio.
Yeah. It says she has a degree in print journalism from BYU. I've never heard of that school, so we'll have to talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
She balances work for local and national publications with her most important job yet, mom to two energetic children. How old are your kids?
They are 5 and 3, and I have another one due any day now.
Any minute?
Yes.
So don't get you too excited during this phone conversation. Is that what you're saying?
Not any minute, but hopefully someday soon.
Yeah, are you about done being pregnant?
Yes, I am. Yes, done.
It reaches that point, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Where you're just like, yeah, you know, this motherhood thing is beautiful, but I'm ready for this motherhood thing to begin.
Yes.
It says, yes. Natalie's been obsessed with organizing and decorating since childhood. Her husband, Todd, often comes home to find that she has yet again rearranged the kitchen cupboards. So thanks for being here with us in the Cultural Hall, Natalie.
Thanks for having me, Richie. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. So is the book out or is it coming out? Talk about that. Let's get that out of the way so then we can get to know you a little bit and talk about homemaking.
Yes, the book is out. It came out on August 14th, so it's been out for about a month.
How's it been so far?
It has been great. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
My timing is pretty bad with the baby, but I've had to do book signings and book launches, you know, 9 months pregnant. But aside from that, it's been a lot of fun.
See, and I understand how that would be difficult, but also think about it. You've got that perfect place to rest the book so you can sign it.
Yes, that's true.
That you wouldn't have if it would have been a different way. Is the book selling pretty well so far?
Yeah, I think it's doing great. We've had a really good response to it. It's at Deseret Book, Costco, it's on Amazon, I think it's at Barnes & Noble, so far so good.
What made you decide to do it?
Well, the book was really, the idea for the book was Elisa's idea, and...
That's the other author on the book.
Yes, my co-author Elisa, she came up with the idea and then approached me about doing it with her, because I've worked, she's editor at the Daily Herald down in Provo, and I've been freelance writing for her for... 5 or 6 years now, and she knew that I was into domestic type things and approached me about writing it with her. So we wrote it 50-50, but she was the one that came up with the idea. But the basic premises of it, the reason why we came up with the book is that we were both busy working moms and we wanted to know the best, most time and cost-effective way to do household tasks. You know, our generation was told to focus on careers and education and things like that that are great, and I love that I have an education, I love that I have a career, and I love that I can be a mom as well. But there's all these different tasks and household things that we didn't spend hours and hours learning growing up.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like it's kind of a lost art, really.
Yeah, it is. And because of the economic times that are happening with the recession, when we wrote the book, it was kind of at the height of the recession, and we realized that a lot of people were interested in doing these things again to save money. So things that maybe before they had delegated out, dry cleaning, ironing, different things like that, ate out a lot more. People were all of a sudden interested in food storage and menu planning in a way that they hadn't been in years past.
So it kind of came about, you say, just really as a practical way to save money for people?
Elisa she tells about it in the introduction to the book. She had had a kind of a moment where she realized she really needed to figure out this homemaking thing. And what happened is she had, for a long time in her family that she married into, been known as the one who really couldn't cook or bake.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally got a recipe that she had that she was really proud of, and she was supposed to bring it to a family dinner during the holidays. And she pulled it out of the oven, and it was beautiful, and it looked delicious, and she was so proud of herself. And she set it on her top of her stove, and then she walked out of the room, only to be pulled back when she heard the sound of exploding glass. And she had put it on top of a hot burner.
Ugh.
And the entire dish that she was supposed to bring that was going to show everyone that she had finally kind of made it as a homemaker had exploded all over the kitchen.
Oh, jeez.
So she said she cried a lot, and then she realized, you know, I really need to kind of get a better handle on these things because I don't have an army of servants to do these things for me. So that's when she called me and said, I think we should write a book on homemaking. You know, and we talked about how it was relevant because of the time and because of the economy.
So I want to talk more about it, though, because I think you bring up an interesting point that there are a lot of people. I'm not sure, how old are you? I know that's an inappropriate question to ask a woman.
29.
But there's a lot of people that are kind of our age that are just like, meh, you know what? I can go. I can buy that cutesy thing for my house. I can pay someone to come and clean it. I can, you know, the time is so much more valuable, I guess, than actually doing these things for yourself. So why? Why would, you know, why is it important to do it yourself?
There is a balance to be had, for sure. And in our book, I think that's kind of a nice balance that we strike, is that even though we're interested in homemaking, we're not Martha Stewart. We want to do things that are doable. So sure, if you can go out and you have the time and you can make more money than it costs for you to hire someone to clean your house, hey, clean your house.
Mm-hmm.
Hire someone to clean your house. I don't think you have to, like, scrub your toilets yourself to be a good homemaker.
That's where you and I disagree. I think that you have to scrub every toilet yourself to be a good homemaker.
You know, and lots of times when it comes to buying clothes versus making them, in our sewing chapter, our expert that we interviewed for it says, you know, absolutely, most of the time it is cheaper to buy clothing than to make it all yourself. But it's, I think, important to have basic skills, like you can patch a hole or you can sew something up, something that would really does save you money and doesn't take a lot of time. So we try to focus on things that aren't a huge time suck that do save you money. So
what do you think the biggest thing is that people can save money? I hope that's not a spoiler, obviously, for it.
One of the things we talk about a lot is menu planning and grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So many people buy food, go to the grocery store, throw things into a cart, even if they get a good deal on it. If they don't have a plan for how they're going to use it, it rots in their fridge and they throw it out a week or two later, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They say, in fact, I think I want to say that I heard just recently that almost upwards of like 40% of people's food that they buy at the grocery store ends up in the trash without even being prepared.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you think that doesn't save you. That's just waste. That's just money down the drain. So most people, even if they have a housekeeper, even if they, you know, do send out their laundry or whatnot, they still do have to prepare at least some sort of food and buy something to have in the house. So even if your meal plan is, hey, I eat out 3 times a week for dinner and we only make meals at home 4 times a week, that's still a plan, and that will help you buy only the amount of food that you need for those meals, and it minimizes waste. So even though you're not making every dinner, every meal from scratch at home, you're still saving money.
So do you go actually with a menu, like, here's what I'm going to do this week? Is that what you recommend? Or talk a little bit more about that.
Well, we try to present in the book different strategies because we realize that homemaking is not one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
So one strategy is to go off what you already have in your fridge. So, for instance, actually, that's what I did this morning. I looked in my fridge and thought, okay, I've got...
Oh, geez, all this stuff again?
All these different things that I need to use. What sort of meals could I come up with? And then I look at my recipes that I already kind of know off the top of my head or that I know I have and try to come up with a doable plan. And I also try to look at the ads to get an idea of what's on sale or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm, you know, realistic about how much money I'm going to go spend at the store.
Like, for what example, though? Like, you said you did this morning. You looked in the fridge and said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. What did you find when you looked in the fridge, and what are you having for dinner?
Okay, well, I found plain yogurt
okay.
and cilantro, which one of my favorite dishes, and actually I include the recipe in the book.
How convenient.
Chicken curry in a hurry.
Uh-huh.
And it uses plain yogurt and cilantro, and then everything else I know I already have on hand. I always have curry powder on hand. I have chicken breasts in my freezer. Tomato paste, chicken broth. There's just a few other ingredients that it uses, and I already have those on hand. So when I say the plain yogurt and the cilantro that I need to use, I think, okay, we're going to have chicken curry in a hurry. So there's one dish. I have some bell peppers in there, and I happen to have some steak in my freezer, so we're going to have steak fajitas one night. I have.
So it's dinner in Orem this week is what it sounds like to me.
You know, I made cilantro lime rice the other day, and we encourage if you're going to make something, if you can make more of it at the same time quickly, you can either freeze portion of it or reuse it. So we had chicken quesadillas a few days ago, and I made cilantro lime rice. I have some leftover. We can have that with the fajitas.
Hmm.
So I kind of try to put things together like that in a way that makes sense.
So is the most ideal way to, I mean, really like what you're doing, and it sounds super difficult to do, but to put it together for the week, like Monday night we're having tacos, and then some elements of whatever the tacos could be a reoccurring event on Thursday night, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely do double duty. I don't do that every week. It just so happens that I made extra rice or I had extra rice, and so I want to use it before it goes bad, you know, so I'm not throwing it in the garbage. And it just works out that way. But generally, I don't necessarily plan a specific day for things, although I will say, like, you know, tomorrow my son has soccer at 5. If I don't have dinner planned, something that's probably
McDonald's,
a crock pot or slow cooker before then we're not going to eat till like 7 or 8 at night.
Uh-huh.
So I do try to think, also try to look at my calendar when I menu plan so that I'm realistic about how much time I'm going to have to prepare a meal as well.
Just to let everyone, or to help everyone feel better, sometimes you do the fast food though, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. We go to Subway or whatever. Go to Cafe Rio and the kids get free kids' quesadillas.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think that it's good to plan for that as well, because you're not going to want to cook every single meal at home. You'll feel sorry for yourself, and then you'll probably go out to eat more than you would normally. So.
Yeah. Definitely menu planning and cooking is one thing. What do you think is another thing that, particularly for people of, and I hate to use the term, of our generation, can really benefit as far as the homemaking goes?
Well, Elisa and I joke about this, but the laundry chapter, we actually both learned so much about laundry, and that is actually a really big way to save money, is to learn how to do your laundry properly, because clothes last longer, they look better, you can get stains out. You know, something gets stained, you just, what do? Throw it in the garbage or take it to DI?
Yes.
Probably throw it in the garbage. Right. I don't think DI wants your stained clothing.
I always like to let them throw it out. I let them make the judgment call. I'm like, maybe it's still good. Maybe someone would wear this.
But, you know, that's a huge way to learn how to properly do your laundry. You have to do it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well take a few minutes to figure out what water setting you should do and, you know, how to pre-treat a stain so that your clothing lasts longer.
Okay, so you dish a little bit here. You said that you guys learned a ton. Tell us a little bit.
Well, for each chapter in the book, Elisa and I interviewed different experts because we're journalists and that's what we do, is we try to find experts and interview them. So
you interviewed a mother of 20?
No, I actually interviewed a lady who is the about.com guide to laundry.
Okay.
And she knows a crazy amount about laundry. She used to work for a U.S. Extension Service office, and she's just a huge cache of wisdom when it comes to doing the laundry. So, you know, for instance, she said that you can safely use up to half the amount of laundry detergent you normally do, or that's recommended on any sort of container. So if they say to fill it to this line, you can fill it half that way, and your clothes will probably be just as clean.
So why do they do that then? Just for the use and the expense?
To make more money, right?
Why does really?
They do anything?
Okay.
She said you don't actually need that much to clean your clothes. So there's a big money saver right there. And
yeah.
How annoying is it to go to do your laundry and find out that you're out of detergent?
Yes.
So it lasts longer, the detergent that you do have. Your clothes are just as clean, and you're saving money.
That's great. Something else. Give me one more.
Just having the right water setting or even sorting your laundry the right way. Lots of people, like my brother, throw everything in together. Mm-hmm. If you throw whites in with darks, they're going to
get gray
color. If you throw towels in with other items of clothing, the towels will probably get twisted and your clothes will get a little bit bent out of shape. So it's worth taking, you know, my kid, that takes them like, what, 3 minutes to sort the laundry. It's not a long process, but to sort it by type, and then maybe you don't have a gigantic load, you have three different loads that are smaller.
What about for people that might be listening about their whites?
Whites, hot water is generally the best idea.
But doesn't it shrink them? That's what I've heard. My wife and I have this constant argument where it's like, you do it on hot so that they're clean and they stay white. And she's like, warm or cold, otherwise they shrink.
Well, I always do hot for whites and also like for white whites. And then I also do hot for any sort of towel or kitchen rag or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't put a lot of things in the dryer. I hang a lot of things to dry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where the shrinkage occurs is in the dryer.
Okay.
High heat in the dryer. So I think if you do, you sanitize it in the high water in the washing machine, and as long as you do low or not too high of a heat on the dryer, I think you're good to go.
Then you're safe. What other kind of stuff is mentioned in the homemaking book?
We talk about food storage, budgeting. Obviously, budgeting is a huge way to save money.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that without arguments?
You know what? When my husband and I actually sat down to do a budget, it was liberating for both of us because we realized we had more room than we thought we did initially. You know, we sat down and we're like, oh, we actually, hey, you can go golfing if you want to, or you can buy this if you want to. It's when you just spend your money willy-nilly that you feel like you don't have any of it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that conversation has got to be hard to have, isn't it? I mean, because everyone knows they should have a budget, but it's like, hey, we should probably sit down. And then I don't even know that it's even that hard to necessarily establish a budget, but, you know, keeping yourself to it or actually enforcing it is an entirely different thing.
Yes, and different people have different types of budgets that work for them, and we do outline those in the book. So that's the nice thing. If you sit down and you read through the chapter with your spouse or your roommate or whoever you're doing a budget with, you know, you get kind of the principles that are needed in a good budget, and then some examples of different things that work for people. You know, I have a neighbor who does a cash budget, and so she takes out all of her cash for the whole month, you know, $800 for groceries or whatever.
Jeez, $800 for groceries.
Hey, if you had six or seven kids, that's
probably okay. Okay, I was going to say, wow, good for your friend.
Okay, $400 for groceries, however big your family is, however much you spend.
Yeah.
And takes out in cash and puts it in an envelope. And, you know, when the money's gone, then she's done spending.
Yeah, but that's so hard. How do you do that? Is there a key to doing that? Because I always go, listen, I know where the bank is that has a little bit more.
I think there definitely is some level of discipline that's required in budgeting for sure.
Oh, so that's my problem.
I don't do the envelope system because that doesn't really work for me. For some reason, cash, I'm like, oh, where did it all go?
It's okay. I've got cash for this. Wait.
Yeah, and then you don't have a trail for it. So for me, I like to use my debit card. Some people use a kind of an online program like mint.com that would track your spending, and you go on and you categorize it really quick. I just use a simple Excel spreadsheet. There's all sorts of different ways that you can do it, and you could even just budget for categories that you have a really hard time with and start kind of baby steps that way.
What else is there in the book?
Cooking and baking, and we have recipes in both those chapters.
Oh, of course.
Food storage.
Hold on. What's your favorite thing to make?
For cooking or for baking? I prefer cooking over baking.
Do you?
Yes.
Oh, see, I'm much more of a baker.
I'm way more savory than sweet.
Like, okay, so what's your favorite cooking recipe then?
Well, I do love curry, as I mentioned. I love that chicken curry recipe. Mm-hmm. I like things that with a lot of flavor, so anything that has a lot of just food from...
Like what? Give me an example. Uh-oh, cell phone's going off in the background.
No, that was my alarm to pick my son up. Well, I like the chicken curry, or I have this Beach Street chicken linguine recipe that's in the book, and it has Cajun seasoning in it and soy sauce and different sort of things like that that you use as a marinade. And then when you make it, it's fresh lemon and parsley and
those
sorts of flavors in it. It's really good, and it's really easy.
Yeah? It doesn't sound very easy. That's the part that I have with cooking. It's like, ugh, okay.
No, it really is easy, and I'm not just saying that. Like, the marinade, you measure a few things. That takes 5 minutes. You throw it in your fridge, and then this dish, you boil the noodles, cook the chicken in the marinade till it boils and it's cooked through, and then you toss them together.
Hmm.
It's really simple. I think that sometimes people get overwhelmed by the idea of trying new recipes, but, you know, it's worth it to ask around to neighbors or friends or someone who maybe has a similar lifestyle to you.
Sure.
Ask for recipes. I mean, you don't want to ask, you know, for instance, it sounds like you would not be into my recipes, but right. You want someone who has your time level and your interest.
Well, that's an interesting point, and something that I've never thought of before is you find people that are, you know, in a similar lifestyle as you and ask them. It seems very simple.
Yes. But I think that's something that we kind of try to reiterate throughout the book, uh-huh. is find what works for you. And a lot of times you can find that by asking someone else, like, hey, do you do your laundry on one day, or do you do something, a different load every day? Or how do you clean your house? Do you clean it all in one day, or do you have chores every day? Or how do you get your kids involved in uh-huh. in cleaning, or different things like that. You kind of have to ask around and find what works for you.
You know, you bring up an interesting point with the kids, and I think we'll get to that here in the third block here in just a minute. But talking about teaching kids all of these important things, and how, you know, even with our generation being, you know, kind of early 30s, late 20s, how some of what our parents went through, or even, you know, to some extent our grandparents, in the changes of how it is, how we can be able to teach our kids the importance, and then also just how to be able to teach these skills. So I think we'll come back, and in the third block, we'll talk about that, okay?
That sounds great. Thanks, Richie.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500 to book your shoot today.
All right, time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and joining me, Natalie Hollingshead, author of, let me make sure I get it right, Happy Homemaking, an LDS Girl's Guide.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let me ask you this. So as kind of a homemaking man, I kind of have a bit of offense to just that title. How come it has to be the woman's job?
You know, it could be for a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm, but in the title, you include an LDS Girl's Guide.
You know, I didn't make that decision. That was the publisher.
Was it something that was talked
about
then? Them,
but yeah, that was, I definitely think men can do it. Although I will say, being in the LDS market, it is probably more common that girls will be picking the book up.
Sure.
Well, we have had a lot of women during our different book signings stop to buy it for their daughters-in-law, uh-huh. which is kind of funny.
As only a mother-in-law can do.
They said, does this have a chapter on cleaning? Okay, I'm going to buy it for my daughter-in-law. So,
But that is kind of an interesting comment on the society, I guess. And this isn't something that I gave you any sort of heads up of talking about. But like, I feel like as far as the roles in families, that's changing a little bit.
Definitely. Well, there is definitely a lot need. Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of is a misnomer to say that only women are doing it. That's not true at all. I think the new wave of homemaking is, you know, definitely in this area or in the LDS culture, women are still probably the main people that do a lot of the homemaking.
Uh-huh.
But there has to be a lot of support from children and from husbands. I mean, I know my husband does a ton of things around the house, and not just because I'm pregnant. He'll mop the floor and vacuum and dust mm-hmm. and do all sorts of things like that. He's really not good in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and I've given up on trying to teach him how to make bread or different things, which I actually have attempted before.
Is he good behind the barbecue, though?
Yeah, he makes the barbecue, although he's usually not home in time, and I've started taking over the barbecuing
yeah.
just to, you know, get it started so that when he comes home, we can eat. So
It's an interesting thing, though, because I think there is that kind of different dynamic. I don't mean to dwell on it, and I'll move on here in just a second. But, like, in our household, there's just three of us, my wife, and then we have a 14-year-old son. And it's very much a all hands on deck to
yeah.
where we just want to get it done. And so I think it's, you know, definitely, as the book is titled, an LDS Girl's Guide, but it's like a you don't know how to do this, here you go guide.
Definitely. And hopefully that there's an aspect of that that comes across in the book, is that it's not supposed to be the woman sacrificing herself to do everything and have a perfect home. That's not what we're about at all. Happy homemaking is easy and quick homemaking that gets done. Because, you know, no one's happy when the fridge is empty, the house is a disaster, laundry's not done, that's not good for anyone.
Yeah. So I don't know, though. When the house is a disaster, I don't know that I have a big problem with it, as my wife would probably attest.
I guess it just depends on your threshold for dirt. I know if my husband comes home and the kids have dragged sand in everywhere or whatever, he'll grab a broom and start cleaning up.
Yeah.
At this point, with me being pregnant, it's almost easier for me to wait to clean it up because I know he will.
Yeah. It's like, I could do that.
Speaking, we have pretty similar level of tolerance or lack thereof for dirt
and grime. Let's talk about a little bit about the kids. I mean, we mentioned before in the second block a little bit about how this kind of stuff is important for kids. How do you have the one on the way, and then your other ones are, you'd already mentioned.
Almost six and three and a half.
Uh-huh. So how do you teach them, or what kind of role do they play in homemaking?
Well, I think teaching by example is the first thing, right? I wouldn't really be able to teach them about doing the laundry if I didn't do it, or cleaning if I didn't do it. So there is definitely an element of that, and maybe that's perhaps why a lot of women of our generation didn't get these skills, is because they didn't see someone do things.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say my mom was super homemaker, make Halloween costumes for us, bake bread from scratch, do all those things.
Did she make candles?
Some of it rubbed off on me. I went to college and I still didn't know how to make bread.
Uh-huh.
So definitely, I think being the example by knowing how to do things yourself and educating yourself on the proper way to do things, and then just allowing them to help. We don't really go into detail on detail.
We can talk about some things aside from the book. Do you have your kids separate your laundry, teach them that
totally
kind of stuff?
Yeah, they totally do. In fact, my son usually, I do laundry just once a week because there's only four of us in the house, and that works for us. So on Wednesdays, I just plan on pretty much doing laundry all day. I just know that way I don't like leave a load in and forget about it or things like that. So I change laundry a lot during the day as I'm going about different things. And my son, when his laundry gets full, he'll drag his basket out of his room and sort it by color, and it's really not hard.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter will help with that. They both help me empty the dishwasher every morning. My son puts away the cutlery because he's a little older and he knows how to hand me the knives without slicing his finger off. And my daughter puts away, I have special kids' plates that go in a bottom drawer that they can reach easily. She puts away the plates, the bowls, the cups, everything that they use.
And responsibilities to set the table, etc. too?
Yes. I usually have them get the placemats out. That's the for sure thing. And then I've been trying at dinner time to have us all eat off of adult plates, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And those are up high and they can't reach them. And my kitchen's not big enough to have them drag over a chair and get on and grab them and everything like that. So I usually put those out. But at lunch, I'll have them get their own bowls and plates. And they're expected to also clear the table when they're excused after dinner to take everything over to the side of the sink. They help with dusting. My son has actually been asking me to help sweep, which is great. I usually have to go over it again, but I try not to let him see me do that.
Sure.
They make their own beds. You know, they're kind of lumpy and not exactly picture perfect, but...
But they're doing it themselves as opposed to saying, forget it, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I think so. There's so many things that, especially with little kids, it's just so much easier to be like, I'm just going to do that myself. Move out of the way, I'll do it. But they can't learn anything that way.
Yeah. How important is it, do you think, that we teach kids that kind of stuff?
I think it's extremely important. I think work ethic starts in the home. And, you know, these are skills that they're going to have for a lifetime. I mean, didn't we all have, like, a roommate in college who was totally clueless about how to even boil water or make a bed and clothes everywhere? And I don't want my kids to be those kids.
Yeah, I unfortunately was that kid. I knew how to do it, but because of... I don't know, just maybe being difficult. I was like, no, I know how. I'm not going to, but I know how.
Well, but that's different then. But you get married and someone expects you to not be totally incompetent at those things, and you can. You do have that bank of knowledge to fall back on.
Yeah, for sure. So there's there's everything with the kids, and then you don't necessarily have the experience with teenagers. What do you think is the hardest thing about homemaking for people today?
I think just enjoying it, which is sort of why we liked the title Happy Homemaking. I think a lot of people view homemaking-related tasks, housekeeping tasks, whatever you want to call it, as just drudgery and something that has to be done so they can move on to something else, which is true. But I also think, you know, Elisa and I are really big proponents of, if you're going to do something, you might as well get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So... And maybe that's just my personality, but if I'm going to do something, I want to know a lot about it, and I want to feel like I'm doing it well and that I'm doing it competently and in a time-effective manner and a cost-effective manner. So I think a lot of people just with homemaking, it's that paradigm shift that needs to happen. And we try to have an upbeat tone in our book and have it be something that people can view in a more upbeat, fun way.
So if do you need to go to your kid? I heard the mom in the background.
Oh, no, I'm, she's okay.
Okay. I always love that, mom, because you never know they just want, or you know that they never just want to be like, oh, I was just wondering how you were doing. You know that it's always something with that.
That's probably all she wants to, she's okay.
So imagine for a second, there's probably someone listening to this that's just like, you know what, I don't want to do this. I don't have time. I, you know, just not interested in, talk them into it. Talk them into being a homemaker.
Well,
or at least trying it. Or where would you start? You know, there's so much stuff. Okay, everyone probably does their own laundry. You know, maybe there's some people that send it out. But then there's every other aspect of it. And it, you know, like you say, it's not necessarily the funnest thing in the world. What? How do you say, you know what, give it a shot, and here's the reason why?
I think you just have to try. And I think, you know, at lack of sounding cheesy, I think that there can be a lot of purpose found in it. I think, you know, cleaning and...
Like what? What purpose do you find in it?
Well, I kind of feel like it, as a mom and as a woman, I feel like it's sort of fulfilling my... not my eternal destiny or something like that, but I think it goes along with the natural instincts and characteristics that I have.
Mm-hmm. So so going kind of on that, if there was a woman that's like, man, I don't feel like much of a woman as far as those traditional aspects. I mean, is there kind of that pass for those people, do you think, where they just go, hey, okay, homemaking maybe isn't for you?
Well, you know, I don't think everyone's really super into homemaking, and I don't think everyone needs to be Susie Homemaker, but I just think, even, I guess I would say to them, even if you're not interested, try to find one or two aspects that you can be competent in that you feel like you can get excited about. So maybe that's food storage, maybe it's gardening, maybe it's sewing. No matter, you know, I think that everyone can find something that they are into, that they, or at least that they can get into, so that they do get more excited about it. And I would bet as people feel more competent in different areas, they will branch out. It's a confidence thing, I think, for a lot of people. They didn't grow up learning how to cook or do anything like that, and so they don't know really what they're missing out on, or they don't have any enjoyment in it. So if you take a class, read a book, anything like that to sort of make you feel like you know what you're doing.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because with the topic of gardening, so growing up, my dad always had a garden. And, you know, I kind of watched him from afar going, okay, dad has his garden. That's what dad does. You know, occasionally I have to help him pull weeds from it, but I never got into any sort of gardening. And then flash forward, you know, 15, 20 years to where now I own a home. I'm married. I have a kid. And it's like, we should have a garden. And not knowing anything to do, you know, how to do it, and not really, I'm a little bit more creative or artistically inclined, and looking at it going, man, I don't even know how to wrap my head around growing a tomato, let alone doing it, let alone making sure that I'm doing it right, or what brand and everything like that. But that's something that, now that I'm in my second year of doing it, I love it. You know, when I go out and it's like, check it out, I grew this. This was a seed once, and now I've got this tomato or this. My big thing this year is cantaloupes. I didn't even know you could grow cantaloupes in Utah, and I've got like 7 on the vine that I'm waiting for them to ripe up. So I think that that's an interesting comment where you're like, you know, try something. I didn't know what I was doing. And really, I'm kind of nerdy about it, where I'm like, and next year, I've already got next year's garden planned out, and I'm going to rotate this year. What's the thing for you? What's the thing that you, of all of these things that you mentioned, that you guys talk about, what's the thing that really gets you and you just love?
That I just love.
You're like, none of it, really. I just wrote a book so that I could tolerate it with a happy smile.
Well, you know, actually, there's a chapter on home decorating, and I actually really like to decorate my house. I like to change things. I like to move things around. That's just something that I've always been into.
That's very
cool.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine. Is that the boy or is that a girl?
That's a girl.
Nice. What's her name?
Her name is Camille.
Nice. Sing it out, Camille. Sing it out.
Go have Lukey help you. Sorry, this is my life as a work from home mom. There's my happy home.
I would have it no other way. Let me ask you a couple more questions, and then we'll go ahead and let you go. Everyone that we invite here in the cultural hall, we like to ask them what their calling is at this time.
My church calling?
Yeah, your church calling.
Okay, my calling. That's pretty philosophical question for me right now. I am first counselor in the primary presidency. I was formerly, I just got released as a gospel doctrine teacher, and that's been my favorite calling so far. But primary is lots of fun, too, just getting used to it.
Yeah. What is, if you could pick a calling for yourself or invent a calling, what calling would you pick?
I would do gospel doctrine teacher again in a heartbeat. I loved that calling.
What particular thing would you teach? Because you can do either one of the four books or the scriptures. What book is your favorite to teach?
I actually really liked the Old Testament.
That's hard, though.
Yeah, it was so fascinating, though.
Okay, all right. I'm not gonna argue what
so
you're.
Much, I liked it because there was so much to learn. You know, other books of scripture we maybe feel a little bit more familiar with, but Old Testament was truly something that I had to study a lot and try to figure out. And it's just neat to see parallels between those ancient times and today.
What is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith. I would have to say, I just love how happy I am when I live gospel principles. I feel like, my husband and I talk about this all the time, we feel like a huge testimony builder to us is just the fact that our lives are so less complicated, not that they're uncomplicated, not that we don't have problems, but there's so many things that are avoided by following gospel principles, and so much joy just to be found in serving others and magnifying our callings and things like that.
We also ask people to climb up on the Ramyumptum and let people know how they can get in touch with you, how they can follow you or befriend you on Facebook, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, we have our blog, which is tohappyhomemakers.com, T-W-O, happyhomemakers.com, and they can get book updates there, read media reviews, and we try to post a couple different times a week, different projects. And then on Facebook, I think it's facebook.com/happyhomemaking will take you to our book page, and you can like us there, get updates. We do giveaways for aprons and different things like that, let people know where we're signing books, and those are probably the two best ways.
Okay, no Twitter, anything like an
no,
email that people
No, no Twitter.
Could...
I need to do that, but at this point...
What, are you going to have a baby any day? Is that what you're going to try and tell me?
I'm trying to, and Elisa is actually also expecting, she's due in December, so we're trying to minimize the amount of extra things to do we're adding to our lives.
Is there a chapter, like an extra chapter in that book about pregnancy?
No, but there's one organization, and that does help when you have a baby.
Well, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for being here in the cultural hall with us. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that when the time comes that you'll be able to travel home in safety. And if you're not able to listen to this podcast this week, that you'll be able to listen to this podcast next week. And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the cultural hall.